The whistleblower who exposed internal documents from Facebook has gone public. Francis Haugen spoke to CBS's 60 Minutes about how the company's algorithms encourage discord, harm users' mental health, and facilitate violence.
Facebook has realized that if they change the algorithm to be safer, people will spend less time on the site, they'll click on less ads, they'll make less money.
Haugen is set to testify before Congress this week, and these revelations about social media give new fuel to old debates about the internet and how it works. What should the rules be? Who should be in charge? Well, a new book takes on these questions. It's called Four Internets: Data, Geopolitics, and the Governance of Cyberspace. And one of its authors joins me now. Kieran O'Hara is Associate Professor in Electronics and Computer Science at the University of Southampton in the UK. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Now, Kieran, you and your co-author, Wendy Hall, describe the internet as not one digital space or idea, but as a splinternet. I mean, originally, I think I remember there was what you call the Silicon Valley open internet, you know, free ideas, free exchange, free love, the original incarnation. What happened?
Well, it's very interesting. It was a lovely ideal, I think, that libertarian West Coast ideal. What happened was problems began to emerge, not at the beginning when there were just a few scientists using it, or people using it in good faith, using it for more or less the same reasons, but when very large numbers of people began to use the internet. So, for example, there were problems with privacy. There were problems with social stability, misinformation, problems, things like that. And as a result, different people, different groups, different political groups have started to have different answers to the question, what is the internet for?
Right. And one of the answers that you write about is the Chinese government's answer to it. You call this the paternal internet, you know, walling off certain political ideas, imposing surveillance. I lived for a number of years in China. I have to say, I kind of got used to it. But China is also where companies perfected this technology and are kind of exporting it. Is this a growing space, this paternal internet?
It is. I think to an extent, any government is keen to ensure that the internet has what it sees as good effects. But China takes this certainly to an extreme. China, as you know, I don't need to tell you, China has a very strong view about social stability and about the Communist Party as being the top of the hierarchy. But if any government, I think, is interested in making sure that the internet is not a disruptive force. And so lots of governments are interested in learning from China and what China's doing to the internet.
Yeah, I mean, as you're saying, this model is being kind of borrowed from or adapted in other countries. Do you have an example of a place where there's kind of this emerging version of the paternal internet?
Well, China is very keen to export its own technology through what's called the Belt and Road Initiative. And there are lots of places, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa or the Middle East, where Chinese technology is being used to create what are called smart cities, cities with lots of sensors and surveillance to enable things like congestion or carbon emissions or crime to be managed more effectively.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get what some of us in the U.S. would describe as Big Brother, but I can kind of understand the thinking from those who are wanting to borrow from that. Tell me about, I guess, internet number three, as you write about, the bourgeois internet. This is where governing authorities, notably in Europe, want to make sure to protect privacy and protect data. So if you're a company in this space or an individual who wants to be in this space, you have to adhere to some of these, say, data protection rules before you can even kind of join and be a player in the bourgeois internet. Is that it?
Exactly that, yeah. So the example, I think, of the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, which came into force in Europe in 2018, that's very powerful. That has worldwide reach. And when any company wants to process data anywhere in the world about an EU citizen, it had better make sure that it's adhering to GDPR. And it does have global reach. The first prosecution, I think, under GDPR was a Canadian company. And this is a very different approach to the American approach to data and personally identifying information. And there are a number of American companies that have had to, that have felt they've had to pull out of Europe, and they, that you can't get to their websites from there. More normally, the idea is that for a big multinational company, it's actually easier to adhere to one set of standards, and Europe wants to see itself as the standard setter.
Okay. And finally, many Americans, but internet netizens in other places are familiar with what you call the commercial internet, right? Google wants to keep me in its orbit with its products, its empire, I guess. So is Facebook, so is Amazon. And in other countries, so is WeChat. So given these commercial behemoths, I would imagine this model has staying power, yeah?
I think it clearly does. The idea here is we just view the internet as a piece of property, and you can own bits of it, and we look for market solutions to problems. And if you can make monopoly profits, that's fine, as long as you're innovating, as long as there's value to the consumer, to the user, through your innovations, you're allowed to do that. Now, that model... As you say, it's a very attractive model for a lot of reasons. Mm. there's a lot of money to be made.
Sure.
It was under pressure at the end of the Trump administration, certainly under pressure under the Biden administration, through antitrust law and antitrust efforts. And I think the reason for that partly is that it's one of the relatively few things that both sides of the American polarized political divide agree on, that the tech companies might just be a bit more powerful than politicians in Washington would prefer.
Yeah, one of the teeny tiny spaces where we have some bipartisan thinking. there is the role of the technology companies. I want to ask you whether there's anything wrong with this. I mean, when I first read about, I'm going to talk about the four internets, my immediate inclination was, ooh, four horsemen, right? The apocalypse is coming. Something is wrong here. But perhaps is this just the way things are?
I think that's a good point. That's a very good point. And I do agree with that. It would be lovely if everyone across the globe respected human rights or respected private property, but they don't. Governments are going to censor. Governments are going to have their own views about what are happening. And they're going to interfere. And what we've got to do, ideally, is keep the internet going, keep it connected, while still leaving everybody space to do their own thing online, even if we don't like it.
Mm. And can I ask you finally about one additional constituency, as it were, and that is the hackers. I mean, cybercrime. I just read that it may be the world's third largest economy for how much money we're talking about. That's a Walmart revenue times 12. I mean, how does that fit into all this, or is this, you know, planet number five?
And my co-author Wendy Hall and I thought a lot about this because it is such an important part of the internet, the hacker community. Clearly, there are countries who live by hacking. You know, Russia sees the internet, I think, as a way of attacking the West. So, how does it fit in? It's not. We didn't see that as a fifth internet. Because it needs an internet to be parasitic upon. It's parasitic upon an internet, but it needs someone else to run it. It is important, I think, when we think about how the internet is run, how can we establish, and again, we were talking about the internet being divided into various constituencies and four internets. It's important not only that we keep the internet connected, but that we cooperate in seeing off the hackers, if we possibly can.
That is Kieran O'Hara talking via the internet. He's co-author with Wendy Hall of the book Four Internets, Data, Geopolitics, and the Governance of Cyberspace. Kieran is also associate professor at the University of Southampton in the UK. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.